Shelley Trumpet.
So I'm with James McCabe. It's our bonus section, and I'm going to start off by picking up on a book you mentioned by Keith Johnson, Impro. Now, I've read that book a long, long time ago, and it had an impression on me. And I also trained as a performer in physical theatre and mime, would you believe it? Not great on podcasts. I take exactly the point that you make about it, is that it teaches you to accept and not to block people, but also to give everything free range. So how would you sum up for our listeners what you got out of that book?
Well, it was funny because I had hoped to be an actor, and that was my aim. And I ended up being poached by the world of advertising, and I thought that was that. And I'd read this book, and there were, at that time, I didn't have any books on copywriting, but I still had my trusty book on improvisation, and by Keith Johnson. And one of the most important things about it that I took into advertising was, when you're brainstorming ideas and trying to surf through the soup of ideas, what Keith Johnson used to talk about was always go with the first idea. It's like trusting your mind, because you always think the first idea you have is really often feels a bit bland and a little bit uninteresting, and so you discard it. So instead of going, something about a fish, you go for something about amazing purple elephants, stampeding across Mars. You think, oh, that's far more clever. But then actually, when you look at it, it's not funny. But fish, as we know, fish is always funny. Your unconscious kind of knows what the right idea is, what the right thought is, and you just have to trust it. And that he's, as you're saying, very much about trust. And as an actor, when you're improvising, it's also trusting what you're being offered by your fellow actors. And again, it just creates this kind of current of exchange and electricity between actors. Because if you stop and think, that stops the exchange, So he's very much about, playing the yes game. Always say yes to the offer. And the other side of it, Jim, the book that I found really interesting, which you might remember as well, was that he divides the world up into status transactions. And every play and every movie, one actor is playing a high status character and the other character is playing a low status character. And so that's how the drama unfolds, somebody basically pulling rank and the other one reacting to that. And then he extends it and he says that's the same thing in the real world. And then you start to walk around and you see a shopkeeper talking to a customer, and the customer is playing high status because they are in a higher position of power, and you see these status transactions where people actually shift the transaction, like somebody goes to tell off a tramp for being in their way, and then the tramp turns around and says, what's your problem, and that they switch round. And so so the whole world is basically a kind of a soup of shifting transactions where people are taking the superior position and the submissive position. And I saw the world like that for months, and I was walking around thinking,
The world had been revealed. I'm the same. I mean, it's amazing how much once you learn as a performer can go and be used elsewhere. And I did a lot of improv and status play from his book with the Arvin Foundation. The Arvin Foundation is a charity for writers, and you can go off and do retreats or you can do courses. And the first one that I ever went on was with a theatre company called Knee High, who are sadly no longer with us. Took them out. There's a guy who started it called Mike Shepherd, and we did a lot of this. And it reminds me of, in comedy, the status play would be the most obvious one I can think of at the moment is Blackadder. So you have Blackadder, and he's always a lower status servant, and he's talking to monarchs, like the Queen and Prince George, etc. So his he's low status talking to high status, but he's higher status because of his intelligence.
Yes, exactly.
That's the exchange that's going there, which is just people love that, especially in the UK when it comes to class.
And someone who knows how to manipulate status plays to their advantage.
I saw that when we were on this Arvin Foundation, the one we went to was Toddley Barton in Devon, and they had a barn as a studio, and they brought along one guy called Tristan, and Tristan ended up, this is many years ago, he ended up being in the West End in a movie piece that they did as theatre, which I can't remember what it was called. It had David Niven in it, and can't remember the name of it now. But also on that course was an actress from the Old Vic in Bristol. And they did this status play, and Mike was standing behind them and would just click for them to change status. And it was just one of the most amazing things I've ever seen, because they were so good, these people, that they immediately shifted their state. It's just incredible. And like you say, after I was like for months afterwards going around thinking, oh, that's a status play, the status play. So it's really interesting how that can come into stuff. Your characters that you create for Sketch House, are they just ciphers? Are they one dimension and a particular status or a particular type? Or do you go into any depth of creating a small backstory for them?
Well, it's funny. I sort of feel like I've come full circle, really, because as I say, I started out acting and doing this work, this Keith Johnston work and all the rest of it, going into advertising and using those skills for writing ads, and then coming into Sketch House, creating characters again. And so I think I still use those, probably unconsciously use those status transactions, because you've got instant comedy. So I don't know if there's much depth, but certainly that's a tool that you can use straight away, is you've got characters which you can play around with them from that status point of view. But of course, the other side that you're concentrating on all the time is you're trying to create realistic characters, because as I'm sure you will have found, creating comedy characters, they have to be believable, living, breathing human beings. If you clown them up too much, you can very quickly lose audience identification, because they don't feel real. And when we're doing business characters, we want the audience to see real people in real business situations. Even though it's comedy, it has to have the ring of truth.
No, I agree absolutely with you. And one of the handiest things that I learned when doing physical theatre was we did a fair amount of Commedia dell'arte stuff, which is hilarious, and mask work, which is an extraordinary thing to do if you find a decent mask workshop. But in Commedia, because this started, I think, in the 12th or 13th century in Italy, and you'd have a group of travelling players, and they go from town to town, basically doing the same thing, you know. So you'd have Harlequin, etc., and other stock characters. I can't remember who they are now. But they worked on scales. So they used a scale of 8. So 8 could be a circle of 8 on the stage, so you knew where your placement was. I want you at 8 and you at 4. And then you swap, or you go down to, etc. But it was also the scale of emotion. So we did these exercises of the big emotions, mad, glad, and sad. And the teacher would have us go from 1 to 10. And if you got to 10 and he thought you had more, he'd go 11 and 12, etc. And so he could say during a performance, right, so we want sad here, 3. Okay, and you've done the exercise so often that you knew the difference between 3 and 4. You know, and that's something that I do when I write characters, that I might put that scale in there for some reason. So this person is 100% bad. This person is 1% bad. But, you know, so you can play around with that once you've created them. But I want to go back now to what you were talking about, going with your first idea. Have you ever gone with not got your first idea? What do you do when the first idea is just, okay, I can't work with that? How do you create more ideas?
Well, that's true. It's not foolproof. It's like the first idea isn't always going to be the right one. But I think you have to kind of trick your brain and perhaps cheat your brain to go back to as though you're starting again, because you don't want to lose heart and sort of feel, because, I mean, it's easy to start panicking and think, I'm on a a tangent that's not working. So perhaps what you might do then is reframe it, start again, and maybe take another source of inspiration. It might be thinking about movies. So perhaps you were thinking of an idea that was about everyday office situations, and if it felt like it was not working and you weren't getting anywhere with the first thoughts you were coming up with, you try a new world, like perhaps cinema or sport or something like that. So and then do the same thing again, still see what comes up first. And one way or another, you'll probably get paid a just by switching genres or modes like that.
I think that's very important, you know. And people talk about writer's block. And for me, because I spouted on in season one about keeping a medicine journal, i.e. reporting on every creative session to yourself and adding tips and tricks that you pick up along the way to find out what makes you more creative. And that brought up a fact that I had when I was writing a trilogy of full-length plays, all based on movie genres, funnily enough. And I got stuck at one particular point, and it took me weeks, literally, because I was only working on a creative side on Saturdays or holidays, to realise that I'd been asking myself the wrong question. And when I changed the question, boom, it started to happen, you know. But there are, and there's two schools of thought here, because I've talked to a lot of creative people on Jelly Trumpet here. And I think you're the first one that's espoused this idea of the original thought is the best thought, etc. And I agree with that totally, because it's inspiration. You're breathing in, you've got the idea, boom, and it's got some energy, and boom, you can work with it. But what I have espoused, I'll use that for a second time, is coming up with an idea and then that adding a quota to it. So there's a comedy writer called Jean Perrett, who was a big comedy writer with Bob Hope. He was his chief writer, and he's written only one of the only few books about writing comedy, his workbook, which I think is just wonderful. And on there he goes on about the quota. And that's something that I put in Jelly Trumpet for creative people, is that you get that original idea. How do you know it's the best idea? And so you add a quota to it. Because if you say to someone, go off and come up with some ideas, they're going to come back with four or five. So Jean Perrett's quota is 100 ideas.
Wow.
And so you go off and you do the 100 ideas. But what you've said, and spontaneously, is about changing the genre, except that. Because if you set yourself that quota of 100, you'll probably get the inspiration for 5, 6, 7, maybe. Then where do you go? And what I do is I collect lists. So it might be lists of colours, might be lists of action movies, etc. like that. And so he also writes about holding the idea in your head and letting stuff hit it, you know, basically. So that's what I do with the lists, and I go for that 100 ideas.
They're all starting points.
They're all starting points, aren't they? And then you go through that list and you probably pick about 5, 6, 7, et cetera, that have got energy, and then you'll narrow it down to one. And then for me, for my troubled mind, I know that I've done everything I can to get the best possible idea.
There's also a point when of being brave enough to let a route go when you're going down this, you know, this genre route or whatever it is, and you think it's not working, but you get so, what you do is you get loyal to the idea that you started with.
Absolutely.
And you have to find a way of breaking loyalty to an idea and going somewhere else.
Well, I agree with you absolutely. So I think we'll end our little bonus session on that with the declaration to be brave.
Absolutely.
Lovely. James McCabe from Sketch House, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim.